I'm in Battersea Park. The last time I was here, I was talking with Joe Thompson. We were sitting on a Life for Williams trailer and there was a very dodgy forklift driver. I'm sure he was a nice guy. I'm here to interview a good friend of mine. Just giggling. And former guest of the show, Sherry Carman. This episode is brought to you with thanks to CD Natural Stone. We'll play this intro jingle and we'll come back to you just after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Sherry, it's been, on this occasion, it's been a few weeks since we spoke, but recorded, it's been...
3 years, almost.
Yeah.
Almost 3 years.
Do you want to tell the listeners where we were at the time?
We were sat in my garden at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show 2016.
How do I do this part of it? So we're going to make this episode all of the bit that's happened in between, because you've done a bit, and even though we've kept in touch, Peter goes off on a tangent for a while, comes back full circle, and it's sort of like a little bit of a Bon Jovi video, but we have kept that contact, if you want to call it.
Yeah, we have. And you're right, we have seen each other not too long ago on your garden for Cardiff. A lot of things have happened in the 3 years. My God, it's gone by really, really quickly. But we haven't actually seen each other at any of said shows or anything that I've done. We've missed each other. Constantly. What's it called? Boats in the night, sails in the night, whatever it's called.
I'll back that up by saying that's actually spot on, because when we were talking, and this interview isn't about me, but some of, I suppose, what we've been involved in together will logically come up in conversation, but we did go through this together, and it transpired that at Chelsea 2018, I think I was there on the Tuesday, but you'd come in at a time when I was actually leaving to go somewhere else, but we didn't know this. And then I think, I'm unsure then.
Ships in the night, that's the saying. It's different shows, the landscape show. I think I was there on a different day than you were.
And I was Tatton. Speaking at it.
Yeah, you were speaking.
Yeah, Tatton, I was there.
Tatton, you were there, but again on a different day that I was. I think I was there for Build Ascot. Ascot's another one.
Ascot, yeah, that's right. I was actually there for all of it, and somehow or another missed you entirely.
I was there for Build.
Right.
And you were just there for the show.
I came in the day. We actually were there on the same day, but I arrived in at 5 o'clock.
And I'd left by then. What does this say about us, Donegan? I think we're just probably never meant to meet. Three years in the making.
It's like a bad aha video, except I'm just a cartoon and you're the real woman. And that's the truth of it. Let's get... I had Will Smith lyrics. I was going to say, let's get jiggy with it, but that's not... this show is we try and keep it on track.
A bit inappropriate, Donegan.
I appreciate that. A lot of things are inappropriate, Cheryl, but let's not go there.
Do you want to say my name properly for the show this time?
You've got a couple of names. So the first one is Shazzer. Cheryl. Sherry. Let's backtrack. We met Hampton 2016. You'd built a pretty cool garden there. And I know if Tim Howell is listening to this, he'll no doubt have some photographs that he can throw back out that are a hell of a lot better than mine. And we had quite a serious conversation, and then we had a little bit of goofing around, none of it intentionally and none of it planned, but just probably how Peter's head tends to evolve naturally anyway. And I'll leave it to you, the listener at home, to stick into Google or one of them, Cherry, Cherry. You actually pronounce that Cherry.
Cherry, like the fruit, you know.
Well, I pronounce it Cherry, so...
Prunus.
Lusitanica, Amanagoa, Loris Rassus. But I'll leave it to you to go back and listen to that, and that's for a later discussion. This one is about, I suppose, again after that. So what did you do after Hampton 16?
So after Hampton Court, The year after I did the BBC Gardeners Live, it was the 50th year anniversary show up in Birmingham at the NEC. I did a garden that was part of the APL Avenue up there, of which I won a gold medal. And then the year after that, so last year, 2018, I was back at Hampton Court. I had designed a small garden for the APL. This wasn't actually a show garden. I think the RHS actually called it a feature garden. So it wasn't judged, there was no medals or anything, but it was treated and it looked just like a small show garden.
There may be a little bit of wind coming down the microphone for you listening at home. If that's the case, I'm sorry, but this was planned. But we wanted to do it into the tail end of the phone, true old school style, because you can probably hear the birds in the background, and the directional microphone excludes all of that, including the screaming child now on the far side of the park. Yeah, but I don't want to get into what's about to come up, which is Hampton 2019, mm-hmm. and a barking dog. But I want to backtrack to the BBC Garden of 2017. What was that? Who was involved with it? How did you piece it together? What was the thinking behind it? And when you're getting into that, the reason I ask... Angry wow. Barking dog. Hold on a sec. We'll put this one on pause just for a minute. Transpires dog is chasing a stick. Pasta. And I think his name is Pasta.
Pasta? Hansa?
I'm unsure. Where were we? Sorry, yeah. Okay, so no, the point of the question, or the run-up to the question, or... Pajay. Right, let's try and stay on track. Was you tend to do gardens that hit the radar, very much so. You do it with a sort of a grace, and you do it with a bit of a style about you. They all seem to be invariably different, completely different, in fact. And then you sort of disappear for a while. From a garden's perspective. Serial show gardeners to differentiate between, if I take former guests Anne-Marie Powell, non-comparables, I appreciate that. Mm. But they tend to consistently have something on the radar that's a little bit out there. Yours is like a heartbeat monitor that just blips up very highly once a year and then drops away. Do you like being the lead singer for a little bit and then just being the bass player, or to quote a different guest and maybe give you a different angle? But Kate Gold always says she doesn't like doing interviews, albeit she's been on 2-3 times at this stage of the game. She prefers the gardens to speak for themselves. Do you get what I'm saying? And yeah. All of that elongated question, albeit.
Yeah. I think I really do enjoy the show garden aspect of things. I think the thing is I've got the bug. And I love doing show gardens. I love being on site. I love the organisation of it, leading up to it, and then actually being on site. It's quite a high, and I like being involved. In between all of that, I think is a mixture of things. I do go back to life, basically, after the show gardens, and that does include, you know, running a business, having a home, just life. And I think it's a mixture of me not really being one of those people that just constantly is updating on social media about what I'm doing, what I'm up to. I'm here, this is who I'm meeting, this is the garden I'm doing. I'm not really that kind of person, and I don't mind that. I don't really want to constantly be shouting about myself. I know that kind of sounds a little bit contradictory to, you know, the goal of being a garden designer, a renowned garden designer perhaps, but that's okay. I just want to do what I enjoy doing. I enjoy doing show gardens, and in between it's just life, you know. It's not that I don't have anything to shout out about, but I'm sure people don't really, maybe not as interested as knowing where I'm walking my dogs on a daily basis. That being said, I am working on amazing projects with really lovely clients, and these gardens I am incredibly proud of, but again, they're not really something that I post about or shout out about, probably just because that is part of my private life, whereas the show gardens are very much publicized. They're publicized, they are for the people to see, to enjoy. They're for my clients, as in the people that's helping me with the garden at the shows. And that's kind of it. That's sort of, if you see what I'm saying, that's you're very much in the public eye with that, whereas everything else in between is very much my life.
Well, let me give you a different angle. And I know we know each other well enough that I can pick up the phone and speak to you. And albeit we haven't met, we have kept in touch. So this conversation recorded this time round becomes a little bit easier. But I'll go back to the bass player thing and you not shouting about it. And I had a conversation now with a former guest of the show, Ray Wilkinson.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me in 2015... you volunteered on her garden. You, it transpires, the more, I think after you ended up working with me, and you listeners of The Sod Show would know that, on the garden at Cardiff, when we were having a bite to eat in, what's the name of that pub that I can't remember?
The Grange.
Yeah, okay, every night of the week. It's a joke. We were chatting about that, and then people, oh my God, Sherry was working on your garden. Unknowns that we had obviously been, let's say, mates at this stage of the game. But, oh, she volunteered on that garden as well. Oh, she helped out on that garden as well. You're like a serial session musician in the Irish pub trad scene who, my analogy in context, you rarely get paid for that. You may get a pint, but you don't do it for money. You do it because you want to be part of the music, the magic, and you hope it's going to be a good session. And that's what makes it wonderful. Or as I said to one of the researchers last week from a long story radio thing anyway, you know, some people like equations and some people like daydreams. Are you a daydreamer?
I think so, yeah. I am a daydreamer. I do like being involved. I do like just being around. I just like to just kind of just float around and just kind of do what I know is going to make me happy. If that means helping somebody, I'm not doing it for the money, like you say. I'm not there to have kudos or whatever. I like helping people that I like, and if it means that they get the support they need on the show garden, then so be it, because I know what building a show garden is like, and I know that having support and help and someone to back you up is very important. So I try and be that person, really, at show gardens for other people, for other designers, for friends, acquaintances. I'm just happy to be there. I'm happy to be there. I'm happy doing whatever. As you know, you called me up to go trim a hedge. Yeah, fine, I'm your lady.
Well, I called you, I think we were chatting, and there's an in-joke in here. I just come back from, I think it was, what country was it?
I don't know. Are you asking me?
It's France, Sherry. It's France. Play the game.
I don't pay any. Yeah.
Because I've just been...
I can't keep up with you, Donegan.
Yeah, okay.
You're all over the place.
I know. We were chatting, and you said, if you need a hand, give me a call.
Yeah.
Two serious matters. But I then, I think, sent you a text saying, I need a hand. There were a couple of things that I can get overly pedantic about. You want it perfect. And sometimes it's easier to trust somebody else's eye rather than, I won't say overanalyze it is the wrong word, but overconsider a finishing touch. Mm. And the odd time you need somebody to turn around in the old black and white Marx Brothers type movie sense of the word and slap you across the face, very gently in brackets, and say, it's fine. And when you're working on ridiculous of the lower, not higher sponsorship numbers, money-wise, it's hugely important to have fantastic, superb people around you, people who you can trust, and not only people you can trust as a as an individual from a personal perspective, but also people who you can trust at being pretty amazing at what they do. And that's why I gave the call, how and ever, to try and get this back onto you. I wanted to bring something up to you about three show gardens that people would know. And the first one was obviously Hampton 16.
Mm-hmm.
The second was BBC Gardeners Were Alive, their 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. Another one I was actually supposed to go to, and then the day before I couldn't go. And we were chatting around that time as well. And then you did Hampton 18. Yeah, I have that correct. Okay.
Yeah.
So when we were chatting about those three gardens that before this, I mean a couple of weeks ago, the point I made to you was that one went down, very much down, the Hampton deepest that had ever been dug. And then the next one was what?
The next one was Gardener's World. That was actually very simple. It was very simple, very straightforward. Nothing was going down by any, you know, crazy numbers or going up by any crazy numbers. It was quite a simple garden. There was a pond. That was the only dig really required.
How deep?
Oh, it was like 800 mil.
Okay.
So nothing. Okay. Standard.
Yeah.
Standard. It really was just a very simple garden, trying to basically show people that you can what you can make in a small space.
Uh-huh.
I kind of teamed a very modern look with wild sort of wildlife friendly planting, and the whole garden was meant to be a fusion of the two, and a way to show people and encourage people to share their garden with nature as much as possible, without it being too twee, I guess, is a way of putting it. If you think about wildlife-friendly gardens, you automatically kind of think of this, it's kind of twee, sprawling mess sometimes, and you kind of think that it's not going to look very pretty. Which is, I'm trying to show people that that's not the case at all. That garden in particular, I did put in some quite quirky things into it. I like adding quirky things. I think I'm quite quirky that way, and I like adding innovative things into the garden that make people go, "Oh, that's a bit different."
I don't remember exactly the surfacing, the flooring surface as such in that garden. Albeit two or three weeks ago, I did go through the photographs and look at it again a little bit more in depth. Maybe it was because there was a 2-year gap in between. But what caught my eye was that you had, was it a Donegal quartz to the backdrop, or at least it appeared like a quartz stone. For you listening at home, it's kind of like about the width of your thumb, maybe a little bit bigger. The kind of thing you'd almost see, maybe, I say maybe, in a, I know Sherry's beside me and I apologise for this, a bathroom, but not in a bathroom. No, I'm trying to describe to the listener. But it's uneven in its finish. It's an uneven texture. It looks really sexy, and it's a kind of a bright, brilliant white, like a travertine stone mixed with a high, glossy, orangey brown, almost like a sandstone. And when it's done well, it utterly looks sexy. But you then added writing into the backdrop of it. And that was made out of what?
Moss. That was live moss. And that was another thing I wanted to show people, how to include something artistic into their garden that could also be wildlife friendly, i.e. moss. I had writing done out of moss, and then I had a sort of mural on one side as well that was sort of like a tree shape with the roots coming down. That was all live moss. Which I was incredibly proud of, because it took me absolutely months and months to do that. It really did. I had a greenhouse especially for all the moss shading. I went to town on that moss. That moss was meticulously cared for. I don't think anything's ever been looked after as best as that moss.
Well, let me take it a different angle, because you could have put in a wall of logs and said, apologies here, but buzzwords and what we tend to see now being done in parks on a large scale basis, which is you fell a tree, you could have relatively neatly, so the public are aware it didn't just fall over and lay there. It was allowed to remain there to encourage all of the things we're talking about of recent, which are biodiversity and native insects, etc., 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 assuming it's a native tree per the RHS report. But we then replicate that in a show garden setting with logs stacked up one on top of the other, which in a nutshell are going to decompose and they are going to rot down, and so it doesn't last forever. And so it's a temporary thing presented extremely neatly on show day, but it's surreal, it's not realistic for me. In your case, yours was something that struck all of those contemporary notes, but you still turned around and went, but here's how you do it sexy style. That's what I took from it, and my head went, little genius, done it again. But you still did it extremely differently from what was a contemporary but equally very different garden in Hampton 16, that is. And then you went to BBC, NEC, Birmingham, which is, and then you go on to Hampton again. So what was Hampton 17 then?
You mean 18?
My head's gone to mosh. 18.
18. So that was a garden for the APL, Association of Professional Landscapes. And previously they had had gardens there, but without sounding too harsh, I suppose they had started out with a trade stand, and then the trade stand became sort of adorned, and then the trade stand became a garden. And the year before that, so 2017 was the first time the APL actually had some designers design the trade stand as if it was an actual garden, somewhere that you can go, sit down, talk to someone from the APL, learn about the APL, get information, and also kind of look at the garden as, this is what the APL do. So 2017 was the first time they did that. 2018, when I designed the garden for them, I think was the first time we'd had pushed that again one step further and thought, okay, well, let's make this, inverted commas, trade stand really look like a show garden. Let's treat it like one. And that's what we did. We had organized it like it was a show garden. We had materials and sort of sponsorship, as you like, with from Kiba, who are a sort of landscaper, who sort of gave us the materials as well, which was fantastic. They came and built the garden. We had plants coming in from Creeper's Nursery, and the whole thing came together like it was a show garden, built like a show garden, just not actually be a show garden, if that makes sense. It like I said, it wasn't judged, but because it wasn't a trade stand and it wasn't a show garden, it was instead a feature garden.
Well, that makes perfect sense. But you build it like a show garden, but you just don't allow it to be judged,
basically. Yeah.
That's not the first time anybody would do it, but the reasoning why, if you've only done trade stands and you evolve then into, inverted commas, show garden, I can appreciate why, if you take, my apologies, but technically show garden judging, which is, don't get me wrong, you at home might turn around and go, that's an amazing garden, it gets no medal or it gets bronze, or equally it gets gold or silver or whatever the case may be. So I can appreciate why they might want to just test the water, see how the build goes, and maybe leave the metal to one side. But it ultimately comes back to, you've got the same amount of pressure put on yourself as the designer. I'll bite the association, and I get their reasonings for at least, or that's my interpretation of them. But from your perspective, I know judges, and I know they'll walk past and go, how come you did that? And I go, well, I wanted to. Yeah, I know it looks sexy, but I also know I lose a couple of points in it. But there's also a financial thing in taking it from standard garden that may achieve a medal. It takes a certain amount of money to just get those finishing touches to professional silver gilt gold, and that once you reach that echelon, I think you're on a different market. I think that'd be fair from my perspective. However, the pressure on you, self-imposed, knowing you, is the reason I like the garden and medal or not. You did yourself proud, but on this one, to bring my now 15-minute question line full circle, one goes down about 2-3 meters, one goes not so much down, maybe 800 mil, but invariably up, and that one seemed to go entirely up and almost entirely down again. You don't sit still as well. I'll go back to, but you still play bass player.
Yeah, that garden for the APL last year, I still wanted to do something a la Cherry, i.e. a bit quirky, a bit different. So the planting was sunken. And it was sunken by, again, about 800 mil thereabouts. And the seating area and the pathway was above all of that. So basically, I wanted it to be like you're looking down on the sea of planting. It's a different perspective on planting. You know, you're looking down onto it. And it's something different, you know. It's something that people can go away and think, yeah, actually, I'd like to try that. I'd like to try that in my garden. It's something that people may take away from the shows and think, well, that's the garden I remember. It was the one with the sunken planting. It's just about being a little bit different, being a bit more quirky, being a bit more adventurous rather than just doing bog standard. And I'll tell you this as well, is that the APL, now that I've worked with them, and now it's going to be the second year, my ideas always come way, way, way over budget. They start off completely and utterly nuts, and I essentially have to kind of get notched down from the craziness, and just sort of say, look, Cherry, that's a bit much, Cherry. You know, just notch it down. I think essentially the original idea for that, the beds probably were sunken a lot more, and the seating area was probably, I don't know, 2 meters high or something.
But that's it's standard to want to design the dream and then the client, in this case JPL, to turn around and say, well, we can't give you a gazillion squillion pounds. Mm. You've got 12 quid, and by the way, I'll buy you breakfast this morning.
Yeah.
That's standard. And as I say to private clients, as well as, you know, whether it's show gardens that I've been a part of, if you don't reach for the stars, or if you don't design the dream, it's not that you want to max out £1 million of a credit card, but you're aware of what they are, but you've got to turn around and put it in and then go, actually, that looks damn hot. We should ask Mam for a loan of £10 over purse. You know, we'll make this one happen. Or in a lot of cases, we know somebody who can get that bench for you, or that steel thing for you, or that stone for you. So, and they are the APL. They're the Association of Professional Landscapers. Yeah, I've got that right. They know people who know people.
Well,
so you're dealing on one hand, as I said to Giles from CED, who was, by the way, are sponsoring these episodes, and I'm very grateful for that. But as I said to Giles, you know, if you can't give me your money, then give me your time. I don't necessarily want your money. I'd prefer your time. But if you can't give me your time, then give me your money. Both are going to achieve the same end result, which is to complete a show garden.
Mm.
Okay, we have to pause it just here for a minute. I want to say a big thanks to I just mentioned them there, and we have a very cool arrangement on this, but CD Stone have made all of these episodes possible. There's a gaggle of them, and you'll hear their name mentioned periodically. They did it last year. Extremely grateful to them. We're going to come back with Cherry, not next week, but the week after, I think. And we'll continue this conversation on, and we'll get on to the next project and a little bit more. If you need anything, that's Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thatsideshow, sideshow.com.
come.